3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Strikeout for the King tonight, and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome to the opening day edition of the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast at Mariners Pod. Thanks for being here. Finally. The day is here. It is opening day, and welcome to it as the Mariners take on the Texas Rangers Day Baseball to get things going this season. Oh, so excited. So, to celebrate, Aaron Goldsmith is going to be here. We're going to talk about the Mariners, and we're going to bring back something we did last year, which I thought was fun. Hopefully you did too. Our big, bold predictions from this season. I'd like you to join in too. So I'd read a few tomorrow. So you can tweet me at Gary Hill Jr. or email GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. Send me your big, bold Mariners predictions for the season. I'll go through some tomorrow. You can hear mine. You can hear Aaron Goldsmith coming up in just a few minutes, our big, bold predictions. But it is opening day. Mariners taking on the Texas Rangers for game one. 1:05 first pitch, the opener for the Rangers. Then 5:05 on Tuesday, 11:05 on Wednesday, an off day Thursday, and then the home opener Friday night, 7:10 against the A's, a weekend series against the Athletics. Then the Rangers come to town, so a six-game homestand for the Mariners after these first three against Texas Rangers. So, fantastic. So excited that it's here. It's going. Mariners have a chance, too, to set a little baseball history. Let's tie some baseball history. M's going for their 10th opening day win in a row, which would tie 10 in a row from the Boston Bean Eaters, who did it from 1887 to 1896. So the Mariners looking to tie the Bean Eaters. Now, there's a lot of things that you have to love about the Bean Eaters team that started this, the 1887 Boston Bean Eaters team. First of all, they had Hall of Famer King Kelly on the team as the outfielder, also as the manager. He took over, and the club went 49-43 after he did. And King Kelly that year, pretty good, batted .322, 8 home runs, 63 RBIs. Those 8 home runs, that was third on the club. But, and I love going through old pitching numbers, so this is perfect. So that season for the Bean Eaters, they had 5 pitchers throw, including King Kelly, but we won't count him. He only threw in 3 games. He did everything, clearly. So 4 pitchers used that season, but none more than Old Hoss Radbourne. One of the greatest names in baseball history. Old Hoss started 50 games for the Bean Eaters that season and had 48 complete games. That's a pretty good ratio. He did have a 4.55 ERA. He went 24-23 on the season, throwing 425 innings. He struck out 87. That's not a great strikeout ratio for the amount of innings. 425 innings, 87 strikeouts. He allowed 21 home runs. That is a lot of pitches. I couldn't get a pitch count. Apparently pitch counts weren't really kept that much in 1887. Old Hoss Radbourne. Okay, I know this is completely off topic, but I've got to talk about Old Hoss in his 1884 season with the Providence Grays, who won the World Series that year. So this was the year, his 29-year-old season. He was 59-12 on the season, 75 games pitched, 73 starts, 73 complete games, a 1.38 ERA. He threw 678 2/3 innings, striking out 441. He faced 2,672 batters during the course of the season. All these numbers are sensational. So that's old Haas in 1884. I think his best season. I think whenever you can go out and win 59 games, you've had a good year. I know wins, you know, we don't look at it as the same, but that being said, I think 59 wins is something that we can step back and say, you know, that is a meaningful number. Pitching numbers are so great. So Kid Madden was 19 when he was on that team. He made 37 starts that year, 37 games, 37 starts, 321 innings as, I guess, the number two in the rotation, if you can call it a rotation. 50 starts, 37 starts, Conway, 26 starts, and Stemmeyer, 14 starts for the Bean Eaters in 1887. Other, I guess, important note about the Bean Eaters, a lot of great mustaches when you look at the pictures. I mean, really good, especially King Kelly. Outstanding. So there it is. The Mariners, a chance to make history. The King, Felix Hernandez, will take to the mound again, and this has become an opening day tradition as, you know, he's doing something that you just don't see very often. He's taking the ball for the Mariners for the eighth season in a row on opening day, nine seasons overall, and it puts him in pretty exclusive company in the American League. So pitchers' opening day starts with one American League club. Walter Johnson with the Senators did it 11 times. Jack Morris with the Tigers, 11 times. Brad Radke with the Twins, 9 times. Mark Burley, 9 times. And now Felix Hernandez will be number 9 for the Kings. So he joins a pretty small group of pitchers in opening day starts. So something to watch as well. And Felix taking on the Texas Rangers. Mariners looking to win their 10th opening day in a row. And more importantly, get off this season to a good start with a win over the Texas Rangers. So tomorrow we'll have highlights, we'll have reactions, we'll have the whole thing. And the podcast, of course, daily from here on out. Here on out till, well, whenever the season ends. And we'll see how far the Mariners can take it. To celebrate opening day, well, here's me and Aaron Goldsmith. We're going to talk about the Mariners a little bit and run through our big, bold predictions.
To the sixth, all even at two, and for the play-by-play, here's Aaron.
They're booing me, Rick.
Not you.
That was right on cue.
If they knew you, they would never boo you, buddy.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
Picks up the dirties, washes them, and brings them back fresh.
And we got Aaron Goldsmith here, hair just glistening in the sunlight, so it's pretty distracting.
I'm a happily married man with a child on the way, and I love King Perry. That is me in a nutshell, and I talk about the Mariners on the radio every night, so
kind of let it eat.
Oh, breaking news, the bees are still there. You look up above the mound, and it looks like you're staring up to the mothership, like you could be beamed up at any moment. That white roof with all the circles and the scaffolding.
Way out of here to right field. Thank you very much.
Yes, there it is, the first open of the regular season. Aaron, welcome. Welcome.
You know, Jimmy, I got to say, I've gotten a lot better, worse material since the last time you made that open, if that makes sense.
Hey,
so
there's another B delay. I can work another B delay. That's great.
I've got plenty of fodder that I'm sure I've given you over the last couple of years. But I know you're busy, you know, children, a wife, a day job. But I'm sure that at some point this season you'll find even better bad stuff to put in there for my next open. And I can't wait. I'm very excited for that.
Well, what I'm looking forward to a decade from now when we're doing this podcast and your open is 17 minutes long, our conversation will follow be like 45 seconds, and that will be the segment.
Perfect. I can't wait for that. I can't wait for a decade from now.
Okay, speaking of can't wait, I think we all can't wait. It's finally here. It is finally opening day. I love opening day. I can't wait. This is so exciting.
It really is. It's one of the best days of the year, and it's been fun today to start kind of preparing for tomorrow while still taking it a little bit easy and recouping from, I guess, I don't know what our count is now, maybe we're pushing 35 days away from home at this point, back home in Seattle. I think we all are eager to get back home. But first, three games here in Texas. But yeah, today's always a special day, kind of the calm before the storm, getting some notes done, watching some games that were on earlier today, and trying to relax for just a little bit as well, trying to get all that in one day. And then tomorrow, the first bus leaves the hotel at 10 in the morning, and Scott Service has his first media session as a real-life regular season manager at about 11:15. And then the bell rings, and we get going at noon Pacific time back home in Seattle with the pregame show. So, yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be an absolute blast, and you can't ask for a much better pitching matchup between the King and Cole Hamels. So I'm as excited as you are, G-Man.
If I ever ran for office, which I'm never going to do, my sole platform would to be make opening day a national holiday. That would be all I'd run on, and I think I'd have a chance to win because that's a great idea. It should be a national holiday. No one should work. No one should go to school. It should be just baseball.
Didn't Ozzie Smith make a push for that a couple of years ago? A pretty solid push to make that happen?
Well, if the Wizard couldn't make it happen, I don't like my chances.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
So you mentioned the pitching matchup. It is fantastic. Felix against Hamels. And, you know, this is a pretty interesting Rangers team. We'll talk about more with them the next couple of days. But a team that had a really bizarre year last year, made their way into the playoffs. But beyond the Rangers, too, this is going to be an interesting AL West. I think you look at every team, they could be up or down 20 wins in terms of their highs and lows, where they could finish. To me, it's a very tough division to get a hold of.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a top-heavy division, maybe not quite as top-heavy as the National League Central when you think about three teams at the top there, where you've got like the Cardinals and the Cubs and the Pirates. I think in the American League West, it's going to be tough with just the two teams from Texas. The Astros are improved, both in terms of their personnel this year, but also in terms of just experience. This is an incredibly young team, as we all know, that has gotten a year better and now has playoff series, playoff time under their belts. That makes them scarier. The Rangers, if I'm an opposing team, I want to get as many wins against against the Rangers as I can before their rotation adds you Darvish into the mix. Mm. And when you get Hamels, Darvish, and Martin Perez as your front three, Colby Lewis as the four, and then it's a little bit up in the air right now as to who the five is going to be for Texas. I mean, that's about as scary as a front three as you're going to find in baseball. You've got two legit studs at the front line there with Darvish, depending on how he comes back from the Tommy John and when he comes back. And then, of course, Cole Hamels, who we all know well of, and Martin Perez, who really began to come on strong as well before he was injured. So pitching is going to be strong again for the Rangers. And I think Ian Desmond is an enormous wild card as to what he's going to do in his year here in Arlington. But you add his name in the lineup, if he can get back to the offensive production that we saw him have, for the most part, a couple of years ago when he came to Safeco Field with the Nationals, that's a scary bat to add to already a very potent lineup. So I think the Mariners are going to have a pretty stiff test ahead of them just with the two teams in Texas. And not saying it can't be done, but that's some pretty formidable competition.
You know, the Mariners had a pretty interesting camp. When you look at how things unfolded offensively, you know, their lineup looks how it looked penciled out going into spring training, and I think you can say the same about the rotation. They hurt by injuries with the bullpen. How does the bullpen look to you coming out of spring training, watching those guys game in and game out?
I feel a lot better about the Mariners' chances over the course of the season. And of course, we're not taking into account health here. We're kind of just assuming that for everybody, for all 30 teams. I'd feel a lot better about the Mariners against the two teams from Texas in particular, or anybody for that matter, if the bullpen was just on a little more steady ground than it is now. If, for example, Charlie Furbush was healthy and was the guy that we know that he has been and was in there. I mean, how is Mike Montgomery going to be as a reliever for the first time in his career? That's one question mark. How will Steve Cishek be now that he's back to the closer's role? I mean, we know that he's had success in previous years, as recently as 2014 in the National League with the Marlins. Does he have a chip on his shoulder? Can he kind of regain that form that he had from a couple of years ago before he lost his job? Can Joaquin Benoit continue to be the fountain of youth You've got Benoit and you've got Joel Peralta, who combined are 80 years old. I mean, is this going to be something? Benoit, for his credit, and we've seen it, Gary, firsthand, whether he's been with the Tigers or the Padres, he just continues to be productive. He continues to get his outs. And when he's been asked to be the closer, even in recent years, he's been very successful at that. So, I mean, we shouldn't doubt Peralta, I suppose, at this point, because the results have been there. Do the results continue to be there despite his level of service time getting to be what it is? Peralta injured for much of last year with the Dodgers. He looked good in camp. Can he carry that over? You know, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. Nick Vincent seemed like a good pickup. He's got a track record, which is something that you're really looking for in any position, but especially a track record against right-handed hitters. I mean, this is the bullpen that right now has some questions to be answered, and the only way we're going to answer them is to start playing games.
I think it would be huge, too, for the rotation to give the bullpen help by shortening the work they have to do going long. And the rotation should be a strength. If the Mariners are going to have a year where they push for postseason, the rotation will have to be a strength. And if they can keep the pressure off the bullpen by consistently going, you know, 6-7 innings an outing, which is tough to do, you know, the first few weeks of the season. But consistently as we move through the season, that seems pretty big to me.
Yeah, it's huge. You can tell that's kind of been the philosophy from Jerry since almost day one, when he went out and got a guy like Wade Miley, who you can almost pencil in for sure every year for right about 200 innings per season, is that he wants those innings to be eaten by the rotation. And we saw a couple of years ago when the Mariners almost made the playoffs, we saw Lloyd go to the bullpen, gosh, G-Man, like in the fifth. I mean, if he felt like his starter wasn't having it that day, I mean, the bullpen was so nasty that it was bring on the bullpen for as many as 5 innings, 4.5 innings if needed. So it looks like it's kind of an overall different strategy this year because, well, personnel is different. It's a lot has changed in the bullpen and in the rotation. So it does seem like that's the path that Jerry and Scott want to go in. Fortunately, they've got the horses, you would think. Assuming health for Iwakuma, assuming a guy like Carnes, 26 starts last year, that's basically his track record in the big leagues. If he can continue on that path, he's 28 years old. He's a young pitcher. I mean, he only has roughly 32 starts in the major leagues. He's 28 years old. So we can't think of this guy as somebody who's been around a long time, despite when his birthday is. So the rotation is not without question marks, but I agree with you. I like Carnes. I like Miley. I like the established guys, Felix, Kuma, of course, Taiwan. But there's certainly still nothing's guaranteed, especially when it comes to starting pitchers.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned Carnes, because that leads us to something we did last year that I thought was pretty fun. So we're going to do it again this year. It's our big, bold predictions for 2016. Are you ready? Are you prepared?
I'm very prepared. I'm very ready.
Okay, good. Do you want to go first, or would you like me to go first?
Well, I have 4, and you have 3, so should I go first?
You should probably go first, yeah.
Good okay.
work. That's why you're the and best in the business right there.
Yeah, I tend to paint the picture here. I have a notepad, which I'm holding. I'm standing outside of our hotel in Arlington, and I'm using this lamp as illumination as my 16-month-old son has taken over our bedroom in the hotel, and it's now pitch black in there. So all prep for opening day will be done anywhere else but the hotel room. So it has taken us to the curb here in Arlington.
Major League life on the road is always a glamorous thing.
But it's great. It's great having the wife and the kid here in Texas to start the season. That's been pretty fantastic, despite being evicted. Okay, here is my first bold prediction, G-Man. I'm going to go with Robinson Cano is going to become the fourth hitter in franchise history to collect 200 hits in one season.
Nice.
Ichiro 10 times, A-Rod twice, Brett Boone one time. For perspective, Cano, in what was obviously a little bit of a rough year last season, 179 hits. So I feel like Cano, healthy, feeling good, looking good, got a new haircut, tight sides, high and tight. I think Cano has got an extra 21 hits in him this year from last season. I feel good about that.
Haircuts can always be a big factor in this sort of thing as well.
It's a game changer.
You know, okay, so since we're on the Cano theme, I'm going to stick with that. Cano's going to have a top five MVP season in the American League this year. And I think for many of the reasons you just mentioned, you know what's funny about the season he had last year is his overall numbers are just kind of masked, I think, by the truly tough start that he had. But if you look at the final, since the end of May, really, especially the last 3 months. I mean, he hit 337 in June, 351 in August, 305 in September with power. 17 home runs during that stretch as well, mixed in a bunch of doubles. Even injured, he was able to stroke the ball through those 3 months. I think you hit it, though. He's going to be healthy. I think he's going to have a huge year in the middle of the lineup for the Mariners.
Yeah, I bet you if you prorate those hits right from the time that you started mentioning there when he got healthy, if you kind of backdate that, if you take that production in those months and you kind of backdate it to the start of the season, I bet you he's right at about 200 hits, maybe not right on the nose, but a lot closer than 21 shy.
That's a good one. That's a good start. Good, strong start to the segment. Good work.
Well, I appreciate that. Same for you. Here we go for my second bold prediction. We're going to go to the mound. We're going to go to the youngster who is wearing number 44 this year, a Taiwan Walker, sporting his Pop Warner football number on his back this season. I think Taiwan this year will have more strikeouts than innings pitched this season for the Mariners, which I think will speak to his, continued aggression that we have saw at times last year from Taiwan Walker. Mm-hmm. And this guy is, we know him by now. He's got the stuff. He's got the power. He's got the intimidation when he really turns it on. And we saw that from times last season. I think Taiwan really takes a big leap forward this year, picks up where he left off at the end of last season in Taiwan. Now, we heard that there's not going to be innings limits for any pitchers this year, so who knows where that's going to put Taiwan in terms of innings this season with the reins taken off. At least that's what they've told us. But more strikeouts than innings pitch for Taiwan Walker this season. Officially a strikeout pitcher.
That's good. I like that. So, boy, I have a Taiwan Walker one as well, so it leads right into mine. I am predicting 180 strikeouts this year for Taiwan Walker. So he's going to get awfully close to 200, which I think would be an excellent year. But he'll be third in the rotation in strikeouts, despite the 180.
I like where you're going with that. So if both of our predictions hold true, 180 strikeouts, 179 and two-thirds innings pitch?
Yes. And would you like to know the two that beat him out for strikeouts in the
rotation? I would, yes, sir. Absolutely.
Okay, I think Felix is going to climb over 200 again this year.
Okay.
I think, and maybe I buried the lead in this prediction, I think Nathan Carnes.
I knew you're going Carnes, big Carnes, and you're going there.
Yes, 185 strikeouts this year. So perhaps I buried the lead, but there you go. Three pitchers in the rotation over 180, which would be pretty nice.
Okay, I have a stat to dovetail with that.
Okay.
G-Money. Looking up Carnes' strikeouts per nine last season, right? Because this is a big thing for Jerry. This is one of the reasons why he was attracted to bringing Carnes over to Seattle. Strikeouts per nine innings, if you want to get nitty-gritty, it was 8.88. So they round up 8.9 strikeouts per nine last season for Carnes. So he's averaging close to a strikeout per inning. And I was curious as to kind of where that stacked up among other pitchers. He had a greater strikeout per nine than Gerrit Cole, than Yordano Ventura, and more than Michael Pineda. Wow. I mean, these are all guys that when I hear those names, I think this is like a nasty stuff, power stuff, strikeout stuff. And Carnes, better strikeout per nine than those three starters. So that's not bad.
No, that's a great stat. Those are live arms. I mean, Gerrit Cole, oof, it's nasty.
Yeah, I mean, that's about as nasty as it comes in the National League. And Ventura, I mean, that's filthy stuff.
Yeah.
And we know what Pineda can do. So, yeah, I think you definitely buried the lead there, G-Man, but that's all right.
All right. Okay, so I assume we'll have the same guy here, so go ahead.
I think this year, Nelson Cruz.
Oh, okay.
Are we on the same line of thought here?
No, we finally have a difference here. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. This might not work then. All right. Cruz will be the first 300-100 or pardon me, 30. I mean, the street lamps are fading on me. It will be the first 3,100 hitter for the Mariners since Richie Sexton and Raul Ibanez in 2000.
Wow.
So 30 bombs, 100 ribbies. Of course, Cruz last year, 44 home runs, under 100 RBIs. I mean, are you ready for this, G-Man? I looked into the home runs for Cruz last year. 70% of his home runs came with the bases empty.
Wow, that's a high percentage, 70.
70. So that is like the same thing as a Justin Smoltz single up the middle with Brendan Ryan at second base.
Right.
I mean, in terms of like what it looks like right on the scoreboard, right?
Right, right.
I mean, that's
right.
I mean, that's this is why we've heard Jerry talk so much about getting guys on base and how much of an emphasis that is this year for the Mariners. It's been such a problem in recent season for the Mariners. And then off the top of my head, I want to say, Gary, and I'm pretty sure this number is dead on. If it's not, it's barely off at all. Four of his home runs, four of the 44, came with multiple runners on base.
Wow.
So four of the 44 came with multiple runners on base.
You know what's interesting?
I mean,
yeah, that's startling. You've done really great work on something that I've been fascinated in, tied to this, home runs without reaching 100 RBIs, because Cruz wasn't alone last year. It was a really weird year in that regard.
Yeah, it was strange that Mike Trout was in the same boat.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's funny, if depending on how you search it, right, if you want to do exactly 44 home runs or 40-plus home runs, mm-hmm. the numbers obviously differ a little bit. But, I mean, this is not something that happens often, right? 40 bombs or more under 100 RBIs.
Yeah.
It's a rare thing. And kind of along those lines, the great thing about so many of these stats is that it just makes you ask more questions. Last year, it was the month of September, either that or very end of August, but I think it was in September. Cruz did not have a sacrifice fly
right.
to his credit.
Right. That's so weird.
He finished the season with a sacrifice fly. And I want to say he picked it up with like 15 games to go or 20 games to go in the season. And of course, the sacrifice fly has not been a official statistic. I mean, like if you go to Babe Ruth's baseball reference page, like right. he has zero sacrifice flies, right? Like Ted Williams, I don't think has any sacrifice flies. I mean, the stat was invented after that time. So the data only goes back so far. But Adam Dunn was the only player to hit, I think the number was 40 homers mm-hmm. and have a sacrifice fly until Nelson Cruz. So I think that speaks more. I mean, this gets back to the questions that it leads to. I think it speaks more to just having a guy at third base in that situation than it does to
right.
Nelson's
ability. To fly
ball.
That's exactly
I feel,
right. Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yes. I think that's more of a commentary on situations than Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's like a sure thing and that 10 times out of 10 he's going to bring it in with a guy at third and less than two outs, but I just don't think he had that many opportunities. It's just a hunch. It's my guess.
No, I'm right there with you. Oh, by the way, too, National League MVP last year, Bryce Harper, 42 home runs, 99 RBIs. He didn't get to 100 either.
Bingo, there it is. So we had three guys last year, Harper, Trout, and Big Cruz. That's crazy.
There was somebody else toeing the line, too, but I don't have it in front of me. But, yeah, that's amazing. So mine is closer to yours than I would have thought because I didn't think of it in the context of 30-100. But I think Kyle Seager is going to go 30-plus home runs this year and 100-plus RBIs.
I'm glad you said that because I almost went down that path. Because if he did that, and I don't mean to cut you off of the pass here, G-Man, and run with the ball, but if he did that, there's never been a Mariners third baseman to go 30-100.
Hmm. Wow.
Like, I want to say Jim Presley had...
Yeah, he had like a 20...
The 30. He either had the 30 part, but it had like 90-some ribbies, or he had 100 ribbies and had like 28. It was one way or the other. But in any event, I like what you're thinking. I mean, I think the improvement that we saw from Seager against left-handed pitching last year, I'd like to think that carries over to this season, and he just gets better every year, right? So,
yeah,
I'm with you, Gary. I like that.
Presley's high was 85 with 28 home runs, and 86 he drove in 107.
Okay, so he kind of did it. All right, so that makes sense. All right, so there you go. Hasn't happened by Mariners third base. And by the way, speaking of that, along these lines, I was looking up tonight. Seager this year, with even just like a well below average season, if I remember correctly, he will become the all-time leader in home runs by a Mariners third baseman. I mean, he'll pass Beltre and he'll pass Presley.
Yeah.
So,
it's,
I mean,
it's amazing how quickly he's climbing too on games played lists and lists like that. I mean, he's climbing up the Mariner ladder pretty quickly.
And what was the nugget you found last year about him? Left on left home runs, like outside, like Griffey's the only guy with more in Mariners history than Seager.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Seager, he passed, I don't have it in front of me, but he passed, Abanez was one of the guys he passed. I mean, he's got like 1,000 to try and catch Griffey, but I think he's got like 33, something like that, which is really impressive.
In rough numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's got 33 in his career, again, left on left, which is pretty awesome. You know what was remarkable at him last year? Because we talk about left on left so much. But if you take away the left part and just say home runs against lefties, he was second in the American League behind Nelson Cruz. That includes right-handed hitters.
That is remarkable.
Yeah, I think so. And he's right. He was tied with Todd Frazier, who did it in the NL.
Ah.
But, I mean, we're talking – so if you talk about all Major League Baseball, is Cruz and then Seager and Frazier. That's kind of astounding to me.
Seriously, I agree. All right, you ready for my fourth and final bold prediction?
Yes, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
This has nothing to do with any type of numbers or anything. This is just pure emotion speaking, Gary.
Okay. Oh, emotion, yes.
Ketel Marte will hit for the cycle in 2016.
Oh, yes, that's a great one. I like that. I like that.
And who knows? Based on what we saw in Peoria, the home run could be inside the park.
Oh, that's great. Hey, if you're –
And I know – I could tell that he doesn't hit many home runs, but I think he's going to get hot in a stretch, like really hot, and I think it's going to all culminate in one night. And, yeah, it's going to be pretty special. Marte with the cycle. You heard it here.
Yeah, and if he does that, if you're on the call when he gets it, will you make sure that you work in, you predicted it on the podcast? I think that would be helpful for your listenership. That'd be great.
You heard it first on at Mariners Pod
yeah.
on April 3rd.
Yeah. I know there that sounds go. A little clunky, but just work on it a bit and try and work it into the final call.
I'll iron it out. It'll
Marte
get
has done it as predicted on at Mariners Pod. I don't know, something along those
by lines. By me. I did it. I predicted it. Me. Yeah, that's how it'll be.
Oh, that's a great
either,
one.
Either that, you know what, Gary? I don't care if I'm not on the – if Rick's on the call, I'll just reach over, mute his microphone, and just start yelling. It'll be – he'll understand. You know, Rick's a great guy. He'll get it. He'll totally get it.
Broadcasters love that too. They love
yeah,
being
no,
talked
great.
Over. Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff.
Not an issue.
Well, I think
we've knocked out some pretty good ones here, G-Man.
I know. I have nothing else to say after that one. I like that one a lot. What's funny to me is I think about cycles in Mariners history. It's all the opposite guys that you would expect to have cycles for the most part, which is funny. I mean,
I think
Dan Wilson.
Was Beltre the last
Beltre,
one?
Beltre, yeah, Beltre. Buehner?
Buehner? Yep. Absolutely.
A-Rod has one, but he was – I mean, that's not a big shock, but
– Right. Well, I feel good about this one, G-Man. I think we've primed it all for opening day. I think this is quality work. By the way, we were having a text conversation about this earlier tonight, about if Felix's 8th straight opening day start – is the longest active streak in the majors, and it is. CC Sabathia had a 9 opening day start streak snapped last year when Tanaka took the ball. So Tanaka's second straight year this season included where he will open up for the Yankees. So Felix, at 29 years old, the longest active streak for opening day starts in Major League Baseball. And I found this nugget online, which I thought was fantastic. And really, it's all relative to his age. That's why this is so impressive. If he strikes out 10 Rangers on Monday, and keep in mind, he struck out 10 Angels last year on opening day at Safeco Field. Mm-hmm. If he does that again, he will tie Roger Clemens for the fifth most strikeouts in opening day history for
wow.
a career.
That's a great nugget.
That's pretty fantastic. I mean, to be 29 years old and tie Roger Clemens for opening day strikeouts in a career for fifth most all time, you kidding me? I mean, that's amazing.
That is amazing. By the way, I didn't mean Dan Wilson hitting for the cycle. I was thinking of his inside the park home run. It was John Olerud, the other one.
Sure. Olerud, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Olerud, Buehner, A-Rod, Beltre. That's the four. Wow, you brought a lot to the table. This was, you were strong. You're ready for opening day. You're ready for the season.
Hey, man. I assume the check is in the mail and we'll all be square.
Oh, absolutely. It is in the mail. May have misplaced your address, but I'll find it, and yeah, you'll get it for sure. Well, good stuff. We're looking forward to the call tomorrow.
Thank you, G-Man. I'm excited for this season, and this will be a good one. A lot of new stuff, as we all know, for the Mariners, and will not be an easy division, but this is going to be a fun season to see how it unfolds because obviously a lot of anticipation, just like there was last year, but with so many new faces, how this season is going to go is anybody's guess. I can't wait to see it unfold.
Can't wait either. We'll be listening. Thanks for everything. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, G-Man. Talk to you later.
Someone once said, you don't grip a baseball. A baseball grips you. It fills our days and brightens our nights. Over the course of a season and the span of a lifetime. We share hope, drama, and joy. It brings us all closer together, 9 innings at a time. It's the game we live. It's the game we love. Welcome back, baseball. Welcome back.
See you later!